On today's episode of Coalfields & Company, we're discussing the replacement of MSAC Commissioner Fred Aldridge, the top players and teams in the Valley region, and an insight to the most anticipated sporting event of the summer. I'm Ryder 2. Stay tuned. Today for the episode, we have Coach and Ryder 2. Just to talk about some news to start it off, the late Fred Aldridge has been replaced by Jim Hamrick, AD of Parkersburg. What do you guys say about this, Coach?
Well, first of all, you know, I have to say a little bit about Fred. Fred's one of the best men that I've been around in the coaching business. He was a good coach, a good head coach. He was a good administrator, good principal. He did a great job with the MSAC. At first, I thought it was going to be very, very difficult to replace him because he did so much. I think one of the best character traits that he had was the ability to handle so many egos in keeping the MSAC together. The MSAC is a powerhouse conference, and to be able to juggle that whole thing was remarkable. So, you know, he's going to be deeply missed. We went out to dinner and lunch a couple of times, and we had a great relationship, and what a great family. I know his wife, Pat, was very heavily involved in the MSAC as well, and she was always one of the most friendly people that you could be around. So he's going to be deeply missed in the MSAC. And saying that, they couldn't have picked a better person, and with Jim Hamrick. I go back 30 years with Jim. He come to one of my Gridoramas when I was coaching in Shady, and we've had a good relationship, won a state championship as a coach, did a marvelous job at Parkersburg, really had that thing rolling when he was the athletic director there, and did a great job. And I think they hit a home run with getting Jim to do it, and I think the MSAC is in good hands.
I think a lot of people a lot of coaches kind of know what goes on and what the commissioner does, but just explain some duties and like how big a role the commissioner can play for a conference.
Well, the biggest thing is it's a legit conference. Everybody has to play everybody. There's a few conferences in West Virginia that's just a joke. They don't play each other. If you get a powerhouse team, you might not play someone for 5 years till they think you're going to be down, and then they'll play. And it's just a joke. This one is not that way. He has a lot of ability to try to handle the egos of the principals and the athletic directors and have that relationship with the coaches. He handles a lot of the referee duties and especially some of the duties that they do in the basketball classic and as far as the Gridorama in football. So it's a huge job. It's a massive undertaking. Jim helped create the Gridorama at Laidley Field for the MSAC, so he's been there before, and he understands how the MSAC works. Like I said, they hit a home run with Jim.
Yeah, I think a lot of players, at least from perspective when I play, they kind of take for granted how much somebody like that could have an impact on their season, because like you said, if they control your destiny with your scheduling and stuff like that, so I think it should be pretty respected about who gets picked on to be commissioner. And moving on to Valley, we got our top 10 ranked teams. At 10, we have Riverside. They are a recent upbringing. They're kind of trying to turn it around from several down years. Winfield at 9, Hurricane at 8, Sissonville at 7, GW at 6, South Charleston at 5, Cabell Midland at 4, Huntington at 3, Spring Valley at 2, and the Capital Cougars at 1. I don't think you're going to agree with this full list, so let's hear it.
Well, you know, for somebody that's played against them, coached against them for almost 14, 15 years, I can say that you can literally take any one of those teams 1 through 7 for sure, because and they could replace each other. You know, Hurricane, it should be 7 in front of Sissonville. Hurricane's got an outstanding football team coming back, and they've got some pure talent there.
And so, transfer of the guy from South Charleston,
right?
Ron Cordon.
Yeah, so there's no doubt in my mind that – if Sissonville and Hurricane played head to head, I think I would know what the outcome would be. But you know, of course, you play the game. I'm not saying that, but Hurricane, I think, has got a fine football team, and I think you can take any one of those teams and switch them around and get this thing. Here's the thing with the MSAC, a lot of people don't understand. It's not how good your first team is. It's how good your second team is, because you play such a brutal schedule that you're going to get people banged up. You're going to get people hurt. So your depth comes into play, and you can have a really, really good team in week 1, 2, and 3, and then you get to week 9 and 10, and you may be a whole different ball club because each school beats each other up so bad. So it's very difficult to rank any one of those teams. I think they're going to be. I think there's going to be some dogfights like there usually is, and I think it's going to be fun to watch.
Would you put Cap and Spring Valley in kind of a different league of their own, or do you think either one of is any programs kind of a lot further ahead than any of the others?
I don't think any one of them's farther ahead. I think Huntington's loaded with talent. They got great coaching staff. I think Midland's got some great players, and they're always physical. You know, you just got so many different contrasts of styles of play with offense and defense that will match up. The weather may come into play with a lot of the schools having turf now. You know, the weather's not an issue, but you could go to Spring Valley and get in some mud, and that changes the complex of the ball game. But you know, I've got a sleeper team in there. My sleeper team is George Washington. I think George Washington is well coached. I think that's my sleeper team out of all of them. Not a lot of people are talking about them like they're talking about some of the other teams, but I do think George Washington may be the sleeper.
And, you know, we got the double A's in there because, you know, the Coalfields region is a very double A dominated region, where the Valley is a more triple A dominated region. And so we don't have a lot of double A's included, but we have Sissonville, Winfield, Wayne, Tulsa, and Herbert Hoover.
Well, I think you could say the same thing about the Cardinal Conference. People really take a look at that Cardinal Conference on a double A scale. You know, that's a brutal conference, and the same things can happen to you in the Cardinal Conference that could happen to you in the MSAC. So, you know, you're going to have a little bit of good luck in the injury bug in double A because you don't have as many players out. Some good things are going to happen to you. The sad thing is there's going to be some really, really good football teams in AAA and AA that may not make the playoffs that are better than some of the teams that are in the playoffs, because one group's going to play a more difficult schedule than the other group. And I've always had a problem with that. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast, and that's the rules we have to play by.
Oh, yeah, and a little correction. Tulsa actually dropped down to single A. I forgot that.
Yeah.
After going to the state championship, they dropped down. And also, we got to talk about Tug Valley. And they lost Dawson Elia. He transferred to Mingo Central. I'm not really going to talk about him in general, but there seems, especially in the Valley region, it seems like there's a lot of transferring going on. Do you think players transferring in is a good thing, bad thing? Or is it just a lot of this time it could just be circumstantial?
Well, you know, I'm not a big proponent of the transferring in and out, but that's the nature of the beast. It's a lot worse other places than in West Virginia. After I've been coaching out of state a little bit the last summer and last year, it seems to be a lot worse out of state than it is in state. I could tell you a funny story. We played one team on game one. I think it was 2008 or 2009, and we played two players from, I believe, George Washington, and then at the end of the year we played Capital and played the same two players. So that's how insane it is sometimes when you're in the
advantage for you. You already got research.
Well, unfortunately, both of them were very, very good. So it worked out. I think we went 1-1 in that situation, but it's neither here or there. There's nothing anybody can do about it. So, but I do think it changes the power of the teams, and at least it can hurt you depth wise. I mean, some of these teams, you know, they can't afford to lose two starters to go to another school, and that, like I said earlier, it's not how good your first team is in the Valley, it's how good your second team is, because you're going to get banged up when you could play Capital on week one, and then you got GW week two, Huntington week three, Midland, Parkersburg, it never ends. So you're going to have quality players and a little bit of depth.
And just I want to talk about Riverside for a second because they had some down years for a few years. I think they went winless maybe two seasons. And I think it kind of gives – it hurts a program because if you look at their schedule, you know, they lose to the best teams in the state. And last year they went 4-6. They beat four teams that they should have beat and lost to six teams that were just pretty good teams. Would you do you think they're going to continue? Because it's you know, historically a pretty talented area. And I think they have a pretty good coach right now.
Well, I'll answer it like this. One, I think Zach's doing a good job. I've seen both of it. I've seen when Riverside's at its top. Ralph had some great teams down there. Dick had some good teams down there. And I played and battled against all of them. I got beat Riverside, I think, in a real close game in the quarterfinals one time. So I've been on both sides of it. That's the brutality of the MSAC. You know, there's no mercy there. Your schedule is going to be brutal. I do respect the fact that they're trying to fight their way through it and not just do like some teams and get out. I don't think they have the capability of getting out, and they're fighting through it. So I think I respect the job they're doing. They've made drastic improvements. Zach's done a good job there. The big thing is make sure you keep your players there, keep the weight program going, and I think good things will come.
All right, just – before we switch to players real fast, Capital, Spring Valley, Huntington, Cabell Midland, South Charleston, George Washington, or Hurricane. Which team, if you had to go up north to beat Martinsburg, would you take?
Wow. I think just on a skill level, I don't think let me just say this. I think Capital would be your best bet because they can match them in skill set positions. I think the biggest thing with Martinsburg, if you're going to beat Martinsburg, you have to get them out of Martinsburg. It's going to be very difficult to go up to Martinsburg and beat them at Martinsburg. You're looking at a guy that had to face them two times in the playoffs in the first round. And it's a very difficult place to play. You've got to get them out of Martinsburg and get them playing away. And that's going to be a difficult task. But, you know, talent for talent, Capital has the speed and the skill sets to do it, and probably the attitude to do it. And there's a little rivalry behind the scenes with the coaching staffs with that too. So, you know, that makes it very intriguing as well. I think it's going to be difficult for a team that is a grinded out team to beat them because Martinsburg's so good defensively. I just don't think you're going to line up and knock them off the ball.
I mean, they look unbeatable on paper pretty much.
Well, nobody's unbeatable, and we all know that, and everybody listening to the show knows that. But I do think it's going to be very, very difficult for a team just to go toe-to-toe and knock them off the ball and win the game because they're capable of scoring 21 points real quick. And if you can't match that, you're going to have a hard time. With Spring Valley, you know, they found that out in the state championship team game, you know. And it's same with us. You know, when we played them, it's a tough atmosphere to play in up there if you're going to try to grind it out against them.
All right, and then we'll just talk about the players a little bit. The top eight players we had, I mean, this is hard because, you know, some regions have a higher abundance of talent, and it's obviously pretty focused down in the valley. We have Doug Nestor, you know, a top prospect at number one, tackle from Spring Valley. Darnell Wright, a rising junior from Huntington, also an offensive lineman. Grant Wells, quarterback from GW. Caron Cordon, the transfer from South Charleston to Hurricane, wide receiver. Tanner Williams, also GW linebacker. Jaden Hayes, Huntington's skilled player. Steven Shine, defensive end from Hurricane, and Jacob Cassidy, a tight end / DN from Spring Valley. You agree with that? Who do you think we have missing?
Well, there's several kids. I really like Pittman from Capital. I think he's a dynamic player. I think if he gets in the open field, I'm not sure anybody in the state is going to be able to catch him. I think there's so many players in the valley, it would be tough to even try to get them all on the show. In fairness, compared, I think you could take some of the other than two players in the Coalfield, I think you could take about 10 players in the valley and they would be listed high. Yeah. In some of the other regions, I mean, that's how power packed the show is. I mean, you got some guys that's got Division I offers and Division I AA offers as well as Division II offers in the valley that, you know, already this early in the game. So,
I mean, we have Ivan Vaughn. He's a mention, and he was first team All State running back last year. He just couldn't find a spot for him.
Yeah, he's going to play college ball. He'll play college ball somewhere. You know, you can take the quarterback positions. You know, Derek Johnson from Spring Valley, I think he's a good quarterback. He's a solid quarterback. Kerry Martin, he's a solid quarterback. He's going to be a sleeper as a junior from Capital. Murphy from South Charleston, you know, they're going to be lighting the ball up like Donnie does every year. He's got a nice touch on the ball. He's coming back from a good year. I really like Andrew Huff. I think he showed in some of the 7-on-7s from Winfield that Andrew's going to have a banner year. So, quarterback positions, you know, that's that in itself. There's so many good quarterbacks in the Valley area. I think Ethan Burgess from Buffalo, according to his film, just watching him, I know they throw the ball a lot. It's kind of tough to get a fair evaluation because they do throw the ball so much at Buffalo. But,
comparing Ethan Burgess and Trey Murphy real fast, they both did lose their top skill guy because Buffalo lost Dylan Lucas and South Charleston lost Caron Cordon. So, I mean, that's kind of the hard part that comes with being a quarterback is, you know, if you don't have anybody to catch the ball, it kind of can make you look not as good.
Oh, you're right. You're right. That does go a long way. You know, and some of the other skilled players, you know, Ivan Vaughn from Cabell, you know, he's – you know, they always got an outstanding line. So, you know, he's going to be hard to handle. Jaden Hayes from Huntington is going to be hard to handle. Dawson from Huntington, he's going to be tough.
He's a big play threat, big tall guy.
Yeah, I mean, trying to defense Huntington is going to be interesting because they've got so many good skill position players on top of having some of the top linemen in the state in that area as well. So, you got Hill from Capital. He's going to be a pretty good one. So, you know, the Valley is just loaded. I mean, loaded with skill people. It's fun watching them on film because, just try to figure out how some of these teams even plan on defending those guys. If you're trying to defend Pittman at Capital, I mean, you know he can blow right by you. So, that's a tough defensive play for you to try to stop that and then turn around and stop their backfield with Kerry at quarterback. And you pretty much got that across the board.
We had Doug Nestor and Darnell Wright as the 1 and 2 players in the entire state. They both are getting Power 5 college offers. I mean, they're both pretty good. And so I think that kind of overshines Jordan King from Cabell Midland. I think he's a Division 1 prospect. And, you know, Cabell Midland, they have the tradition of good linemen. And I think that's why guys like Ivan Vaughn can step up young, and I think that's why it's just a complementary system. And then Steven Shine and Jacob Cassidy, they're both similar body types, but I think Cassidy – is better on the offensive side. And Shine was one of the players who actually gave Nestor probably the biggest fit of his year at defensive end.
Yeah, and I tell you, you know, Owen Tillis, I believe, transferred to George Washington. So, you know, that gives them a shot in the arm as well, too. And that's why I said when you take a look at those teams, you can interchange those teams from 1 to 7 any way you want to because I think they're all that close. I think it's going to be fun watching some of the matchups. You know, a lot of people go to football games and they like watching the skill people match up. You know, I like going and watching those offensive linemen match up and defensive linemen match up in the trenches. Yeah, Doug is definitely an elite player in the state, and so is Darnell. Those guys are two – what we have listed is two of the top – they're top linemen in the country, yeah. Not just in West Virginia. They're listed as top linemen in the country. I mean, anytime Alabama comes knocking on your door, you know, you're doing something right. On the defensive side of the ball, you got Hoff from Capital and Joseph from South Charleston. Those
Hoff
are two –
legit 4.49 at linebacker. So, I mean, at Capital, I mean, it doesn't stop with their speed.
Yeah, and that's why it's so tough playing Capital. I mean, when you play Capital, you can be beating them 21-7, and within 2 minutes it's 21-21. They just have so much speed, and they got so much breakaway capabilities. Every single play has to be a win-loss situation for you, and you have to take it that way. I think we have two if you want to put Owen in that mix as well, I think George Washington has two or three of the best defenders in the Valley, you know, with Tanner Williams, Hall, and Tillis. So that's why I have him as a sleeper. Defense wins games in the MSAC.
And of course, you know, Grant Wells. Too,
oh, yeah, Grant Wells on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, they got four of the top players in the state on their team. So I hear a lot of people talking about all the other teams, but I do think GW is going to be a sleeper. The
another guy I liked was Drew Joseph from South Charleston. He had listed 181 tackles, and at first I was looking at it, I was like, you know, I didn't kind of believe it. But if you watch his film, he's all over the place, and I can see as a guy, he's a little undersized, so I can see how he kind of has to step his game up in the other areas and play the whole game, make every tackle. And I also think another good linebacker kind of got left off just because there's so many good players was JT Cooper from Hurricane, Shamik Berger from Huntington, and Griffin Adkins from Cabell Midland. I think all three of them will be all MSAC players and potentially all state players too.
I think everybody on our list, even you want to add Chase Goldsmith from Capital on there, are college-level players. They're going to be playing somewhere. If their grades are where they need to be, as far as talent's concerned, every one of the players on our list that we'll put out from what we've watched on film and what we've seen on film and 7-on-7, camps, combines, every one of these players are college-level players.
Yeah, and also, I mean, so if it's hard to wrap up everybody in one episode. So, I mean, if you're left off, I wouldn't even feel that bad about it on the Valley, because there's guys like Grant Dixon from Winfield and Ben Belandia, two really good linemen, that they would probably be ranked in almost all the other regions. So I wouldn't take too much offense for it. It's probably the most focused area when it comes to just pure talent. I think it's been pretty well known that that's where a lot of the talent comes from in the state. And we're wrapping it up with just some talk. We want to hear Coach's opinion on who he thinks is going to win one of the most anticipated fights in recent memory between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather.
Well, you know, it's going to be dynamic. I've never seen so much trash talk in my life. I think McGregor definitely won the trash talking contest. I have to answer that in two different ways. You said fight. So if it's a fight, I think McGregor ends that fight real quick. But it's not a fight. It's a boxing match. And even though I can't stand to watch his fights, it's a joke to watch him. I wouldn't pay a penny to watch it because he doesn't box. He sets back and just counterpunches. And that's his style, and I understand that and understand the boxing game. I love martial arts. I've done martial arts all my life. In a boxing match, you know, there's no doubt Mayfield. He will win.
Mayfield?
Yep. Mayweather, I'm sorry. Mayweather. So when we talk about Mayweather, I think he's going to be tough to hit. I mean, he's so quick. Everybody's probably seen some of his training clips and that kind of stuff. So I tell you, it's going to be tough for McGregor.
I'm going to stop you right there, because I think McGregor is going to shock the world and he's going to win this, because he's predicted. I'll just throw some things at you. I'll see what you think. He's significantly younger. Mayweather's 40. He's younger. He predicts almost all his wins and how he does it. So I believe in his win. He's a lot bigger. And, you know, I don't think Mayweather can't knock him out. I'll say that for sure. Mayweather can't knock him out.
Well, you know, the issue is who would win a fight and who would win a boxing match. Boxing match is a science. Boxing is a science. To go in there and you're going to take on one of the best in the world, one of the best that's ever been in that weight class, and a man who's never been beat, I just don't see it happening. One, I think he's so good at boxing, I don't think it's going to be very difficult to even get a hands on. I think a lot of people are going to waste their money, because I don't think McGregor's going to get – I just don't think he's going to land any punches, and I don't think Mayweather's going to let him do it. So I think it's going to be like some of the other Mayweather fights that you watch. You're going to be very disappointed.
The biggest letdown, you think?
Yeah, I do think so, because –
until McGregor knocks him out.
I just don't think he's going to get that opportunity. I'm clarifying, if it's a straight-out fight, all right, I think the most intriguing part that everybody's going to wait and see is, will when it gets down to the late rounds, you know, Will McGregor decide to drop a little kick on the side of his head.
He'll lose all his money.
He'll lose all his money if he does. But, he, you know, I think a lot of people have that slim thought process in his head that, you know, hey, let's just throw a nice round kick to the side of your head and see how you handle that. But in a pure boxing match, I think a lot of people underestimate, you know, how difficult it is to fighting because he just don't let you get a solid shot on him.
I don't even think he'll get that far. I have strong faith in McGregor. And I'll say it now. I'll bet on him. And so, okay, bigger odds, since you're strongly believe Mayweather's going to win. Somebody beats Martinsburg or Mayweather loses. Which one's probably more probable?
I'd say probable. Mayweather loses. And let me explain why. Boxing's so
– negative 700 odds for Martinsburg.
I think boxing's so crooked, and that's why nobody follows it anymore. I think that's why it's dead. I think that's why – MMA is so popular because it is so crooked. Now think about it. Say, you know, there would be a rematch and you know it'd be another $250 million. So I would say that option's always on the table when it comes to boxing, and I think it would be something that would be, you know, I think it's a legit possibility. I think the only team that beats Martinsburg is Martinsburg.
All right, so you guys heard it here that, you know, Martinsburg is a little better than Mayweather. So that'll be our episode today. Hope you guys enjoyed. We'll see you next time.